Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, it's a busy political Monday, Katie. We've got Jeremy Corbyn, who's been sent to Coventry to give a speech on the customs union and Britain's relationship with Europe after Brexit. What's he ended up saying?
Yep, so this is Jeremy Corbyn's much-awaited Brexit speech, and over the weekends we were getting lots of hints that he was going to get all in a customs union. In the end, what he said was that Labour would seek a new comprehensive UK-EU customs union to ensure that there are no tariffs and to avoid the need for a hard border. There are a few, I think, points that are not entirely clear about Labour's position. He said that in this customs union, Labour would want a say over trade deals that were agreed by the EU. But it's not really clear how much of a say they'd accept or if it's just, you know, for them to pass it on to them for a brief kind of response. I think in general his speech was this pitch which would have played well to the membership. It did seem like it was tipping towards a softer Brexit. He spoke about EU nationals, criticised the government for their handling of that, and also made this cross-party appeal that I think will worry the government, which was to MPs willing to put country before party to join them on backing this a customs union.
James, what did you make of Jeremy Corbyn's decision to take this position? We've known for quite a while that he's not that in favour with a close relationship with Europe.
I thought this was almost inevitable in that the customs union doesn't bring with it free movement, so it's unlikely to get the kind of sense of Brexit betrayal in some of those Labour Leave constituencies that backing staying in the single market would. I also don't think that Labour Leave voters are crying out to do new comprehensive free trade deals with the United States or South Korea. And it also offers him a chance with this Anna Soubry amendment to try and defeat the government. And I think if you look at the nature of the political cycle at the moment, if you're Jeremy Corbyn, you want to defeat the government sooner rather than later. Because otherwise this narrative of, well, why are the polls still deadlocked? Why aren't Labour doing better? Could begin to carry on. And also to keep up that kind of, oh, Jeremy Corbyn intensity of last summer, all the way up to 2022 in the next general election, will, I think, prove to be surprisingly difficult.
And on that Anna Soubry amendment, Katie, just explain for listeners what that is and why it's causing so much grief in Number 10.
So this is an amendment to the trade bill, which tries to make it so the government would need to arrange a customs union of some form between Britain, the EU, when the UK leaves. This is a problem because Theresa May, on the few things she's been clear about what Brexit means, other than Brexit, is that it means leaving the single market and leaving the customs union. The term customs union is so specific that it's very hard to fudge your way out of that one. A customs arrangement would be more loose. And the government is so worried about this, they've actually delayed the vote by a few months in the hope that during that time they can win over their party on their vision for Brexit, so the need to leave a customs union. And that's really the main hope. And there's now also thinking that the best way for them to get enough votes and to dissuade Remain rebels like Anna Soubry, but maybe not Anna Soubry, but other ones like Sarah Williston, would be to make this into a confidence vote. So to basically say, If you defy the government on this one, if you vote with Labour, then you will be bringing down the government and potentially bring in Prime Minister Corbyn. And I think it says something that this is seen as the best bet, potentially, of winning this vote.
James, you've written about this option over the weekend, and I've been talking to some of the would-be supporters of this amendment. And I have to say, they don't seem very happy with the idea that Number 10 would want to make this a confidence vote. Do you think that Number 10 and the whips have thought this through as an option? Because it could well lead to two groups of people who don't get on very well, don't understand one another very well, second guessing whether the other is calling their bluff. And we've had this before in the Commons where people second guess one another's intentions and the government ends up losing votes. I'm thinking primarily of the vote on Syria actually in 2013.
I think there is no other way for the government to get this through. In that, if you say to people, oh, this is the vote and you can affect the Brexit policy, I mean, there are more than seven Tory MPs who are back staying in a customs union with the EU. And ultimately, this is what John Major had to do to get Maastricht through. And I think the rebels, there are two camps of rebels. There is the Anna Soubry camp who are, I think, have got sufficient religion on this that they are prepared to pull the temple down over it. And then there's Nicky Morgan, who yesterday was saying she's not yet been persuaded to drop her support for the amendment, which is a very different kind of language. Now, I think the hope of certainly some very close to the chief whip is that there'll be enough progress between now and May in terms of the Brexit negotiations that the more moderate rebels will say, OK, we can see where you're heading here. We can see how these enhanced customs arrangements are going to work. So we'll withdraw support for the amendment. There'll be no need to make it into a confidence vote. But I think if there isn't, it will be that, because you actually have to say, look, this is, if this amendment passes, Theresa May, not only is her authority gone domestically, but crucially, her authority within the Brexit negotiations is gone. She will be broken back in those negotiations because the others, those sitting across the table from her, know that she can't get things through her own parliament. And so I think that if the rebels are not prepared to kind of accept the assurances on customs arrangements and the like, I think come May, they are going to have no choice but to make this into a confidence vote.
Katie, this raises the spectre of perhaps another general election in the nearer future than has been planned. And I'm sure Brenda from Bristol is absolutely delighted at the prospect of another round of voting. Who do you think would actually benefit from this? Because the parties are generally level pegging in the polls at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I still think the prospect of an early election over this vote seems more unlikely than likely, but it obviously is a possibility. I think the problem is that even if this is brought about because of a vote where the government were trying to, you know, stay in power and keep the show on the road, and actually it was an amendment which was mainly backed by Labour, it would still be the Conservatives, I think, that would be blamed for another early election. Because, and I think the voters wouldn't want that, Brenda particularly, but in general, I do think there is a feeling that people should just be getting on with this. And they would have to explain how they had got to this point if there were an early election. So I think it'd be difficult, given how little the government can achieve in a hung parliament, given the stage in the Brexit negotiations, to really turn any early election around in the Conservatives' favour.
I also think one of the things that those people who are arguing for a confidence vote think is they think that lots of the rebels still have this idea of a kind of, that if you brought down the government, you could have a kind of Hillary Benn, Nicky Morgan government of Remainer national unity. And one of the things that they think is you've got to make people confront the choice, which is under, you know, in that 2 week period that the Fixed Term Parliament Act mandates to try and put together a new government, you wouldn't be able to put that together. So the choice would either be putting Jeremy Corbyn in Downing Street or a general election with the Tory party in total disarray, because the reason you would be having a general election is because Conservative MPs don't have confidence in their own Prime Minister.
And finally, in terms of one Conservative MP whose Prime Minister may not have a great deal of confidence in him at the moment, Katie, Ben Bradley has had to issue a grovelling apology to Jeremy Corbyn for defaming him and has had to donate a five-figure sum, we believe, to his local food bank. Do you think that what happened last week suggests that the Conservatives were wrong to appoint him as vice-chair of the party?
I think it's a tricky one. I mean, there are several vice-chairs that are appointed in that reshuffle. Wasn't so much a reshuffle because they're new roles, but in that general reshuffle. And his role specifically was vice chair of youth. And I think what Ben Bradley has shown the past few weeks is he does have to make the mistakes of youth. And he has shown also that he isn't really an experienced pair of hands. Like, these are all not great things to write home about. But I also think for his specific job, you did need to get someone quite inexperienced in order to really make that pitch. They're now working out the bad consequences of that, but I think there is still a hope and there is still belief in the party that he has something to him that can be a benefit. I think it's just now there is extra pressure on him to show the benefits of him in that role, because we've had a few difficult months, really.
James, Ben Bradley is, I think, 28, the age at which a lot of defamation lawyers are pretty hot on their game. So can we really use being in your late 20s as an excuse? I have to say I'm in my early 30s and it doesn't seem to wash when I make mistakes.
I don't think Ben Bradley's age. I think once you become an MP, you can't use your age as an excuse. I mean, there's also another challenge for younger MPs, which is you know, you might say that you wrote something when you were 23, and if you became an MP at 42, it is easier to accept that that person's views have evolved and matured in the intervening 19 years than if you became an MP 3 or 4 years after you said those things. And that, I think, is a problem. I also think one of the reasons why Ben Bradley got this job was that he was seen as being kind of quick on the draw on social media, kind of fast out of the traps with kind of pithy attack lines. And this is the flip side of that, which is if you're basically going to say to people, kind of go for it, shoot from the hip, people are going to do foolish things like this. But I think also, this was clearly just an industrial stretch based on the evidence that was available. To say that, you know, I mean, he removed all caveats from this, and there was, you know, it was obviously defamatory. I mean, that's, I think, why Corbyn's lawyers have gone for him rather than for Ben Wallace with his Kim Philby comparison, for example.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Katie, and thank you to Nick Hilton, who produces this podcast. And a reminder that you can listen to this podcast and all the other Spectator podcasts on the iTunes store. This one's called Coffee House Shots. You can also subscribe to the Evening Blend email, which is a free roundup and analysis of each day's politics. You can just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend to sign up. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.